views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we're going to be talking about vaccines. It's a topic that I really wanted to dive into. The movie Vax came out, and then that 8-part series on Vaccines Revealed came out, and I wanted to talk to somebody, an expert in the field. And I got hold of Barbara Lowfisher. She's a co-founder and president of the National Vaccine Information Center. She was also one of the top people involved with the Vaccines Revealed series. And I wanted to ask her, well, first we talk about her organization and what they do, which is really impressive. They're there just to educate people, create transparency around the vaccine issue. Very professional. This is why I wanted to talk to her. Very professional, looking at the real science, but making it transparent and available for people so they can make decisions on what's good and what's bad. And also an advocacy group trying to keep freedoms for people to be able to make their own decisions, and in a lot of cases, open up those freedoms in some states, because there's a lot of restrictions on what parents are able to do. They're forced to do certain vaccines. The problem is that for the vaccines that aren't needed, like chickenpox vaccine, and there's other ones too, it's not really a needed vaccine. For some people it is. If you have a disease that where you can't make it through if you get chickenpox, okay, that makes sense. But for the vast majority of people, chickenpox is not a needed thing. But there are many cases of reactions from these vaccines. And for things that aren't needed, do we really want to expose our children to the risks of the reactions that carry more risks than the actual disease in the first place or the sickness that you get? And that's what she's trying to educate people on. And she gives us some examples of some of the vaccines that provide more risks of taking the vaccine than the actual vaccine itself or than the actual disease it's trying to solve. Those are problems. Those are red flags. But the other thing that really bothered me, and that's why I wanted to talk, is the research that's being done in the medical community isn't complete. For example, there has been no research at all on what happens when you do multiple vaccines at once. They might do research on a single vaccine, but nothing is out there on multiple vaccines at once. So how can you say that something is safe if you're not actually doing the research? It's just, it's not right. And they know that people are having reactions because of the vaccine court. So it's not right to not do the full research. It's not right to fast track a vaccine for something that isn't really a high risk situation for society. So she's going to talk about these things. And when you don't have transparency in an industry or an area, that's when abuses can happen. And this is an example of an area that doesn't have transparency. It's just basic 101 of how communities and governments and societies need to work. If you don't have transparencies, abuses happen. And so that's why I wanted to talk to her. So I don't want to waste much more time, and I want to get right into our interview with Barbara Lowfisher. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, I am so glad that you said that you join us, because you're the expert in this field and one of the standout leaders in trying to make a difference in the vaccine world. Can you tell me why you became so passionate about the vaccine issue and ultimately started the National Vaccine Information Center?
Well, I was a young mom back in the 1970s, and I thought I was pretty educated. I had a college degree. I was one of those women who graduated in larger numbers in the 1960s, and I came from a medical family. My mother's a nurse, and I had doctors and nurses in my family, and I thought I was pretty educated about science and medicine, but I did nothing about vaccines. And what happened was my firstborn son, I took him in for his fourth DPT shot, an oral polio vaccination, when he was 2.5 years old. He was a precocious, kind of an advanced child. He was speaking in full sentences by the age of two. He was identifying words in the books that we read together. I mean, he was really a happy, healthy child. Anyway, to make a long story short, within hours of that fourth DPT shot, I happened to witness his reaction, and I didn't know what I was witnessing. His eyes rolled back in his head fell to his shoulder like he'd fallen asleep sitting up, and he was completely out. I couldn't wake him up. And I carried him to his bed, and he laid there for hours, and I kept thinking, is he taking a long nap? Is he coming down to something? I mean, I didn't have any information, because back then, nobody had any information about the fact that vaccines carried significant risks that could be greater for some people than other people. And so, you know, what happened was I eventually was able to rouse him to consciousness, but he couldn't walk. He couldn't sit up. He had terrible diarrhea. He fell back into sleep for 12 more hours. And after that, he regressed physically, mentally, and emotionally, and became a totally different child. It was constantly sick, respiratory infections, ear infections, diarrhea that wouldn't stop. He had petit mal seizures. I didn't know that's what he was having, staring episodes. He was diagnosed with minimal brain injury. What he had suffered was a convulsion. When I saw the eyes roll back in his head, it was a convulsion, collapse shock, and a brain inflammation. And he was basically unconscious, and I didn't realize it that day. So he had to be put into a self-contained classroom, a special ed classroom, throughout his public school education. And he had severe dyslexia, fine and gross motor skill delay, auditory processing deficit. They didn't worry. It was so severe that I couldn't get him out of the special ed classroom. So my son is very lucky, though. I mean, compared to a lot of children who have reactions after vaccination, he is a productive member of society today. Yes, he still has learning disabilities. He's learned to compensate for them. But, you know, the ADD, the problems he has still make it more difficult for him. You know, so what was that? That experience for me said that parents weren't getting information that they needed. I needed to know how to monitor my child after vaccination.
It must have been absolutely terrifying.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't understand. And, you know, the doctors, when I kept taking him back and saying, but he can't do what he did before. And they go, oh, he's just a stage he's going through. Don't worry about it. Well, he never returned to the child he was before. And, you know, my story is repeated over and over again all across this country. And yet doctors are just burying their heads in the sand, and public health officials don't want to address the chronic disease and disability epidemic that is rampant among our children today. And we're talking, I've been doing this work for 35 years, and I have watched as the vaccine schedule has grown from 23 doses of 7 vaccines that my 3 children got in the 70s and 80s to 70 doses of 16 vaccines starting on the day of birth through age 18, when before, there were 23 doses of 7 vaccines given before age 6. And now in this country and this is unprecedented, 1 in 6 child is learning disabled. 1 in 9 has asthma. 1 in 50 now, autism. We have 1 in 10, ADHD. We have 1 in 13 diagnosed with a mental disorder. I mean, there are children in this country who are never well anymore. They're highly vaccinated, but they're never well.
Do you think the doctors, because the authorities are telling them and educating them, they just can't mentally get to the point where the authorities could be telling them something that's not right? I mean, like, they just can't. It's the cognitive dissonance.
I totally agree. There was a German immunologist back in the 70s, and he was one of the first to speak out about the dangers of DPT vaccine, the wholesale DPT, which we worked for 14 years to get a less reactive DTaP vaccine in here for America's babies. But he said, when it comes to vaccine reactions, injuries, and deaths, the prevailing mentality among pediatricians is, what must not be cannot be. And I do think that doctors become doctors to help people. And when they're told by public health officials and by the companies these vaccines are safe, they believe it, and they are in denial, I believe. And, you know, unfortunately, the families are paying the price for this. because and the media has now is demonizing anyone who speaks out.
Making them out to be Fruit Loops.
Right. They speak out. I mean, you know, you go on MVAC.org. That's one of the oldest websites on the internet. Our website went up around the same time the CDC's website went up many years ago. And we have highly referenced information. I made sure that if we're going to put out information, it was going to be referenced so people could trust what we're saying, that we're not just, it's not just our opinion. It's anchored with medical literature references, references from the CDC, from the FDA, from, you know, all kinds of credible sources. If people take the time to open their minds and go and look at the information, they're going to be very surprised at what they see, including looking at the product manufacturer inserts that the manufacturers have to publish as under FDA law. So I think there's just a lot of misinformation out there about vaccines and infectious diseases, frankly.
So what is the main objective of your organization that you started and run?
Mm-hmm. The National Vaccine Information Center is a nonprofit charity. Our mission is to prevent vaccine injuries and deaths through public education and to defend the ethical principle of informed consent to medical risk-taking. That means you have the human right and should have the legal right to be fully informed about the benefits and risks of a medical intervention, such as a pharmaceutical product like a vaccine, and be allowed to make a voluntary decision for yourself or your child without being punished for the decision you make. So NVIC is pro-education and pro-informed consent, and we don't make vaccine use recommendations. We simply defend your legal right to make an informed voluntary decision about vaccination. So we advocate for the inclusion of informed consent protections in state vaccine policies and laws. That means your state should have flexible medical, conscientious, and religious belief vaccine exemptions. In this country today, we are the mass vaccination, the mandatory vaccination system is being much more aggressively and oppressively enforced. And you've got lobbyists that are going into state legislatures that are connected with the pharmaceutical industry, with the public health agencies, as well as medical trade organizations who are trying to take away vaccine exemptions or severely restrict them so nobody can really make a voluntary informed decision. What NVIC has done is we've created, in 2010, we created something called the NVIC Advocacy Portal. It's an online communications tool where you can become a user. It's free, and you get email alerts whenever bills are moving in your state to take away vaccine exemptions. And you, in that, on that portal, you can be put in direct contact with your own state or federal legislators to make your voice heard, you know, by phone, by email. You have a direct line. So, you know, if you want to participate, NVICAdvocacy.org is a website. And in the last 2 years, we've protected vaccine exemptions in 21 states that have been under attack. So
how many states have protections? Are there quite a bit of situations where people are forced to have vaccines? Because I know in my state, you can't send your children to school unless they have a certain amount of vaccines. Not the 70 some that are required, but a limited number.
Right. Well, the way the system works in this country is that the federal health officials at the Centers for Disease Control, they make vaccine use recommendations. And so right now, they tell, you know, doctors to give 70 doses of 16 vaccines. The state legislatures, the states are the ones who make vaccine laws. So it's federal recommendations, state vaccine laws. Now, there's varying regulations, varying laws, depending upon the state you live in. Right now, all states allow a medical vaccine exemption. It has to be written by a licensed physician. The problem with this exemption that's taken place in the last 20 years is that the CDC officials have narrowed the official reasons for why a doctor could give a child or an adult a vaccine exemption, so that 99.99% of Americans do not qualify under federal guidelines for a medical exemption. That means the only other way you, if you're, particularly if you're a parent of a minor child going to school, the only way that you can exercise informed consent is to have a conscientious belief or a religious belief exemption. In all but 16 states, there's a religious exemption, but it can be worded more liberally or more restrictively, depending upon the language in your state law. Now, 16 states have what we call a conscientious or a philosophical belief exemption. NVIC believes every state should have a conscience belief exemption.
Well, because otherwise people who don't want their kids to possibly get sick are just going to claim religious. And so you can at least claim that even if it is conscientious.
Well, yeah, we really recommend that people, if you don't have a conscience exemption, that you work for it. And as I said, you can work with us through NVICAdvocacy.org. But the religious exemption really is for people who have sincere religious beliefs opposing vaccination. And that doesn't mean that your church or your religion has to have a written tenet opposing vaccination. There are some states that have that restrictive wording. Whenever that's been challenged at the high court level, it's been deemed unconstitutional. Because in this country, we have the right to hold spiritual and religious beliefs that are not part of an organized religion. So that's also an important thing to remember. But conscience is a very, very important freedom to protect. It's a human right. Defined as a human right, the right to obey your conscience or follow your conscience is defined as a human right internationally. So that's what we're working for here. And, you know, what's happening is that as this vaccine schedule gets more and more aggressive, more and more parents are asking questions, especially those who are educated. They've got college and advanced degrees. We have a very highly educated following at NVIC. And what they're doing is they're saying, well, you know, I would like to give my children this, this, and this vaccine, but I don't want to give them 6 or 8 vaccines on one day. I want to have a different schedule. Often today, because these medical trade associations, like the American Academy of Pediatrics, are taking a very hardline stand with parents, doctors are throwing them out of their practices if they don't get every recommended dose of vaccine. So the children are being denied medical care.
Are you seeing this all over the country, or Yes. Is it worse in certain areas? And is it all, how many are required? You said 70 some vaccines now the federal government is requiring. So are some of these
recommending?
Are some states requiring all 70?
No. There are like what they call the core vaccines. And some states it's up to now 10 to 12 vaccines out of the 16, and there are varying doses. But it's still dozens of doses of vaccines that are required to attend school. And I mean not just, it's daycare, kindergarten, middle school, high school, and college. Colleges are now putting in those requirements. So you're being denied an education, a school education in the United States, if you don't go along with these recommendations and mandates. And truly it is an informed consent violation, because these vaccines are pharmaceutical products and they do carry a risk of injury or death that can be greater for some people. The government has paid out more than $3.6 billion to about 5,000 vaccine victims since 1988, but 2 out of 3 who apply for federal compensation are turned away. And what a lot of people don't understand is that right now in this country, nobody can sue a vaccine manufacturer for a vaccine injury or death.
There's a secret like vaccine court, right, that nobody really knows about. It's not transparent.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know. A lot of people don't know that in 1986, Congress passed the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. They acknowledged that vaccines can injure and kill people. And they said, well, the government, you know, state government, we're recommending, federal government is, and the states are mandating, so we have to have a safety net for children who become harmed. That's what they told us, because I was around back then. That's what they told us they were going to do. And they said, we have to protect the vaccine supply in this country, so we're going to give the manufacturers partial liability. And they also threw in the doctors giving vaccines. Well, the one condition that you could go to lawsuit for after that was if you could demonstrate the company could have made the vaccine safer, you could go into court. In 2011, the U.S. Supreme Court took that law and said vaccines, FDA-licensed vaccines, are unavoidably unsafe. There shall be no more vaccine injury lawsuits against manufacturers. As soon as that happened, when they were completely indemnified, effectively completely indemnified, this lobbying group of the medical trade, public health, and the pharmaceutical companies went into the states and started to try to take away the exemptions. And the doctors started to take more of a hard line because nobody could hold anybody accountable in a civil court of law for any reason.
Well, do they think that having the risk is better than, you know, taking the risk and having certain people die is still less risk than having people in our country not vaccinated? And so the question I'm going to ask you, is there vaccines that have riskier side effects than the actual disease that they're trying to solve?
Well, first of all, I'd like to address this idea that some people can be sacrificed for other people.
I know. That's
called utilitarianism.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, that does underpin public health law today. It is extremely concerning for those of us who are human rights activists. And I think that we really do need to reexamine that sort of pseudo-ethic that says it is moral, ethical, and should be legal, and I guess it is legal, really, to say that some individuals can be sacrificed for the rest. And because when you go down that road, the question that needs to be asked is how many is too many to sacrifice? First of all, you have to know how many.
And who gets to decide?
Exactly. Who gets to decide? And certainly the informed consent ethic, which was born at the doctor's trial at Nuremberg after World War II, was a guideline for science and medicine, the practice of science and medicine, when it came to individual human beings. And even though that Nuremberg Code, applied to people participating in scientific research, it really became a standard for medical care after World War II. So it's at our peril do we embrace that kind of idea. But I would say that the public health officials have made the decision that the benefits outweigh the risks for most people. They have not, however, found out how many people are paying the price, or the necessary losses or the casualties of the policy, the one-size-fits-all policy. Because we know that all of us are born with different genes. We have different microbiomes. We have different epigenetics that influence how we respond to our environments, including exposures to things like pharmaceutical products. We don't all respond the same way to prescription drugs or to vaccines. And the Institute of Medicine at the National Academy of Sciences have published a series of reports between 1991 and 2013. And they acknowledge there's individual susceptibility for genetic, biological, and environmental reasons, but the doctors can't tell ahead of time who are the ones that are at risk. Why? Because the science has not been done. Why has the science not been done? Because people are sticking their heads in the sand, for one thing. And the other thing is that the pharmaceutical companies that have a tremendous influence unfortunately, in the federal health agencies, they're the biggest lobby on Capitol Hill. They don't want to do this research because every time somebody is acknowledged as having had a reaction and an injury or death from vaccination, this calls into question the safety of their product.
Well, and they're afraid to their product to stop making money. They're afraid that if they stick with their ethic, their code of ethic, then if people find out, then they're going to want to take away their whole, people are just going to reject it. And so their code of ethic will go away. So they have to create that secrecy to keep it this way. But creating the secrecy can create way more problems than they realize. They also don't do any studies, from what I understand, on taking these multiple vaccines at the same time.
Yes. In fact, the last report that the Institute of Medicine published in 2013 acknowledged that there were fewer than 40 studies that had been published in the medical literature addressing the safety of the federally recommended vaccine schedule for children from birth to age 6. And it was really pretty astonishing that is all they could find in the medical literature. And there are a whole host of prevalent immune and brain disorders in children that they said the schedule has not been tested for, including autism, learning disabilities, communication disorders, epilepsy, asthma. It was absolutely astonishing. And yet nobody is compelling this science to be done. At MVIC, we have a mantra that show us the science and give us a choice. I think that more and more educated parents are really becoming very disillusioned by the fact that the government is not doing the kind of science that needs to be done in order to demonstrate the safety of that schedule.
If people are seeing injuries and getting mad about when you're losing children, and we have children that are suffering, there is many more things that make people angry, right? And ignorance is not okay. It's just not okay to just not do it and then say you and then force you to. It makes no sense. My understanding, though, is some vaccines are relatively harmless and they do a good job, but there are a certain percent of children, which we don't know because we don't really do the studies, that can be affected by it. And if we did some research, maybe we can figure out what those risk factors are and say, okay, 90% of the children are going to take this, but these 10% fall out of the you know, it's too risky for them.
Well, you know, I think that there are many new ways that vaccines are being made, and they're being fast-tracked to market. I mean, genetically engineered vaccines with novel adjuvants that hyperstimulate the immune system, different kinds of ingredients that are in vaccines now that were not in there before. And I think that the lesson learned here is we really do need to do a better job of making sure that these products have been tested before licensure. It was extremely distressing when we saw the 21st Century Cures Act, which really sailed through Congress and be signed into law at the end of December. And we had warned a year earlier, along with other consumer advocacy groups, that this is a bad idea to really allow pharmaceutical companies to even have a faster track for licensing drugs and vaccines. Now, nobody was talking about vaccines. I did a reference commentary 18 months ago and said, you know what? The word biologicals is in here. This is not just about drugs. This is about vaccines. Drugs aren't mandated for everybody. Vaccines are.
Mm-hmm.
And this law now, the 21st Century Cures Act, it lowers informed consent standards for people who are participating in clinical trials. It makes it so that pharmaceutical companies don't even have to do large clinical trials on vaccines before they license them.
You're kidding me.
No.
That's terrible. So the people, putting it out to the people, is the trial.
That, unfortunately, yes. And that was true for the Gardasil vaccine. I was actually on a consumer member of the FDA Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee years ago. And when the Gardasil vaccine first came through, I said, you can't use surrogate markers for proving effectiveness. You have actually got to prove that this vaccine doesn't cause cancer. You've got to prove that you have done the work on safety. After that vaccine was the first fast-track vaccine was the Merck's Gardasil vaccine. And as soon as that vaccine got licensed in 2006, we started hearing the reaction started to pour into MVIC and started to pour into the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And we did several reports on it because we said, wait a minute, these girls are passing out. They were leaving the doctor's office and literally passing out on sidewalks. They could be passing out in their car when they drive away. And actually, in the pre-licensure clinical trials, there were a number of car accidents.
So what did the vaccine? What did the vaccine try to eliminate? So people know if they're not
HPV, HPV infection. HPV infection, human papillomavirus infection, is more than 50% of people who are sexually active have had HPV, and it clears the body within 2 years in 99.99% of people without any sequelae, without any residual. It's just the body deals with it, and it's gone. But for a very tiny number of women who don't get regular pap smears or have high risk factors like smoking, co-infection with chlamydia and other sexually transmitted diseases, they go on to have chronic infection with HPV that can, after a number of years, lead to cervical cancer. So that vaccine was licensed as a cervical cancer prevention vaccine.
Okay, so how many people actually ended up having problems from the vaccine versus the people that actually developed problems from HPV?
Well, there have been thousands of,
way more, right?
Of reports. Yeah, and I mean, cervical, again, there was a 70% drop in cervical cancer in the 1970s and 80s because pap smears became a routine part of women's medical care. And so this is something that can be monitored, and you can prevent cervical cancer through pap screening and through making sure that if you do have a change in the cervical cancer predictors when you get pap smears, that you are then have an intervention. So, but they wanted every woman, every little 9-year-old to 12-year-old girl to take this vaccine. Now, when you look at the pre-licensure clinical trials, this is what really concerned me. And we put out a press release in June of 2006 warning that they had tested this vaccine on very few girls under the age of 15, even though they were targeting the vaccine for that age group, under 15. And actually, the New York Times soon after said, yeah, it was tested in less than 1,200 girls under the age of 15. And they only followed them up for 2 years. That's not enough time to find out if a vaccine you're giving a 9 to 12-year-old girl is going to actually prevent cervical cancer.
Well, what doesn't make sense to me is it'd be one thing if we needed something for Ebola or something where it's like, okay, I'll take the risk. I don't care. We're going to die for sure unless we get something, you know? It's another thing when it's such a low risk situation in the first place. I mean, what is the point to doing, to rushing it to market when the actual risk that you're trying to prevent is really low in the first place? And there may be other better methods to, you know, lowering cervical cancer in the first place.
Well, I would agree with you. But, you know, these companies, this vaccine has become the new drug market. Everybody wants, all the companies want to go to vaccines. Why? Because they have immunity from liability. These vaccine products have no accountability. So, it's an exploding market globally. Right now, it's a $36 billion market on its way to be a $100 billion market in the 1920s. So, there are hundreds of vaccines in the research pipeline.
Well, because everybody wants one. Now, how many vaccines do you say fall into that category that you've been researching? Or maybe you don't want to put a number to it, but I would assume there's a number of them, like the HPV vaccine, that is just not worth it. Doesn't even seem like it's worth it to society to have something like that.
Well, you have rotavirus. It's a diarrhea vaccine. It's for infant diarrhea. Now, granted, infant diarrhea can kill a child in developing countries where there's no rehydration therapy, where there's we don't have the standard of medical care that we do here. But rotavirus in this country has been a non-issue. It's been like chickenpox. Chickenpox, the rotavirus vaccine was recommended for all infants in the early 2000s. Chickenpox vaccine was recommended for all children in 1995. And when that vaccine came out, I remember doing a debate with a doctor who had been a developer of the chickenpox vaccine. And we were saying this should be a choice vaccine. This shouldn't be a mandated vaccine. Chickenpox vaccine was originally developed for children who had leukemia, who could not get through a bout with chickenpox without having severe complications and dying. But for most children, pre-1995, they had about a 10-day course of a lot of itching, you know, they got over chickenpox, and they had a robust immunity that lasted many, many years. And then when they got to be adults and they got around children with chickenpox, they were asymptomatically boosted, so it was a protection against shingles later in life. That's how it worked. They constantly got asymptomatically boosted and then didn't have shingles. We now have a shingles epidemic. because Merck's vaccine, this is another Merck vaccine, the chickenpox vaccine has caused a situation where because you don't have natural asymptomatic boosting, you're having shingles outbreaks. And so Merck has developed a shingles vaccine and is the sole producer of both vaccines.
Oh, great.
In this country.
I don't know how we got ourselves. It gets back to that cognitive dissonance. If doctors are more aware, now, are there vaccines that the core vaccines, a few of them, that really make sense for the majority of the people to take?
You know, I'm often asked this question, and it is such a hard question to answer because everybody is an individual. And you may say, okay, tetanus vaccine is that prevents lockjaw if you happen to step on a rusty nail in a field or something, is safe for most people. But, you know, there are tetanus vaccine reactions in families that can be deadly. So it's about evaluating the benefits and risks for each individual and telling a doctor the family history of neurological diseases, disorders, of autoimmune disorders. It's really important for, I wish doctors would be more, rather than take it a one-size-fits-all approach, would be more informed about vaccine side effects and would be proactive in trying to be partners with parents in preventing vaccine reactions. There are children and individuals who are at risk for complications from infectious diseases. Absolutely, just like families who are at risk for complications from vaccines. And the point here should be about health. It should be about protecting people's health, not about implementing one-size-fits-all policy, government policy.
Because every body reacts different, every immunity reacts different, right? Wouldn't it be right. better for us to spend some money and say, okay, let's try to figure out what some of these risk effects and what some of these effects are so that we can be smarter at who we give these vaccines to and who we don't give it to.
I think that's absolutely right, that the science needs to catch up. I mean, we have the ability now in the 21st century to do the kind of science that will answer these outstanding questions that everyone has, and that is, you know, biological mechanism science. I mean, the cells and the molecules, not comparing people against each other, but really getting down to the basic science. We call it biological mechanism science. Find out why vaccines go wrong in some people, who people are, what are the genetic factors, what are microbiome and epigenetic factors. This takes a lot of focus. It takes a commitment to caring about the lives of people who have a problem with vaccination as much as we care about the lives of people who have a problem with infectious diseases. But beyond that, we have to also look at what's happened with vaccines and the mass vaccination programs, because a number of these microbes are evolving to become vaccine resistant. They're organisms that are trying to fight to survive, just like we try to survive, you know, adapt and survive. And they are evolving. The pertussis organism has evolved to get around both the old DPT as well as the new DTaP vaccine. You can be fully vaccinated, have 5, 6 or more pertussis shots, and you can still get infected with pertussis and transmit it. The same thing is true for influenza. Same thing is true for mumps. You don't have to even have any symptoms. And you can still infect other people, even if you've been vaccinated. This is something they don't want to talk about, but it's in the medical literature. And all you have to do is go to the medical literature. And what's incredible in the 21st century, I wish we'd had it back in the 80s, is that the Library of Medicine is now on the internet. You can do your own research with it. Look at credible information. And it's a very sobering when you do that research. And many people who, you know, have just gone ahead and vaccinated without asking any questions, often after they do the research, start to ask a lot of questions.
Well, yeah, when they start to know and there's more transparency to the issue. Now, how can we make a difference? It seems like we're going a little bit backwards. I mean, the alternative media is really getting the information out there. There's more and more doctors jumping on board trying to educate consumers. But the mass media is 70% funded by pharmaceutical companies. So they, there really is a full-blown media blackout on what's going on, and scientific good information is not available to people unless you educate yourself. So are we going forward or are we going backwards? And what's, you know, especially with that Supreme Court case where they're pretty much are immune to any kind of, you know, or any kind of court case against them, any kind of lawsuit?
Yeah. Well, you know, that was one of the reasons that there are a lot of new organizations that are cropping up. MVIC has kind of been here for 35 years, creating a foundation for a lot of new consumer groups who are coming into this issue. And this week we had a protest in Washington, D.C. Some of the groups protested in front of the National Press Club. I opened a rally after that protest, which had to be put indoors. We actually were going to be on Capitol Hill, but it poured. And so we ended up doing almost like a little conference in the JW Marriott there. These were groups that we were getting other groups coming in, like Moms Across America, Millions Against Monsanto, Organic Consumers Association. What these consumer groups are beginning to realize is we're all part of a larger environmental food safety, holistic health freedom movement. And the issue of vaccination is kind of at the center because these vaccines are being mandated more and more aggressively. And the pharmaceutical industry is coming out with more and more. And all of the people in America who understand that we're getting sicker and sicker, even though we're doing everything that doctors tell us to do and that the public health officials tell us to do, they're looking at why do we have so many chronically ill people? I mean, $2 trillion a year is spent to treat chronic disease and disability in this country. And they can't build the special education classrooms fast enough. That just wasn't the way it was when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s. You know, kids weren't carrying EpiPens. Kids weren't dying from a classmate bringing in a peanut butter sandwich.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, they didn't have autism. There weren't all these kids who couldn't learn. And so people are saying, wait a minute, something's wrong. And so they're looking at the food, looking at, we need to label GMO food. We didn't have GMO food back when I was growing up.
Well, the other thing is if you go to another country, which is another thing we got to look at, is because like if you go to France, if you go, you know, in the United States, we have an obesity problem. Anybody that looks around, if you go to a country like France, it's amazing how much thinner they are. And then you come here and then you can see how obese people are. Back in the early 90s, there wasn't a single state that had an obesity rate over 20%. Now there isn't a single state that has an obesity rate under 20%.
Well, you know what I've been intrigued by is, you know, when you really get down and look at vaccination, which is really an atypical manipulation of the immune system to induce artificial immunity. They call vaccine-induced immunity artificial immunity because it's not the same as naturally acquired immunity. Okay, what the vaccine does is it hyperstimulates an immune response, an atypical immune response. That immune response can become chronic. You can have chronic inflammation after vaccination. And that's why you can have brain inflammation that becomes chronic. You can have inflammation of the joints that becomes chronic. What's that? Rheumatoid arthritis. Chronic inflammation is now known to be common to most brain and immune system dysfunction, including obesity. People who are obese have chronic inflammation in the body. The same thing is true for people who have severe allergies, who have inflammatory bowel, thyroid, and metabolic disease. Certainly true for rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, multiple sclerosis, cancer is now thought to be about chronic inflammation, in schizophrenia and depression. People who have mental disorders have found to have very high, inflammation in the body.
Well, anxiety and stress amongst millennials is like three times, or it is I did a show on this, it's astronomical compared to my generation.
Exactly.
It's compared to every generation.
That's right. And I think, I know we can do the science, but it's going to require people to take the blinders off, to step back, and not have a priori assumptions. The a priori assumption has been that vaccines are always good, that they're always necessary, and that more and more vaccination equals better health. We cannot say that anymore. We cannot continue with that a priori assumption. We have to have vaccination be put on the research table. And the truth is that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies have too much of an influence in our federal government. There needs to be a firewall built between
exactly.
industry and government, because government's here to protect us. They're not here to protect the profit-making, the bottom line of companies.
Well, you know, and government is there to make sure that there's a good economic situation so that companies can thrive and create jobs. But it's not to create companies that hurt society and that they have immunities themselves from doing all things wrong. Our code of ethics needs to evolve. Our view of ethics and how we view how things need to operate. I don't know. We have a broken system right now, which is obvious for people who will open their eyes.
That's right. And it's we're at a critical moment in time here. We have
yes.
to make sure that we're not compromising the biological integrity of our this generation and future generations. And I think that, you know, the government needs to acknowledge that a lot of people are sick and they need to find out why. And nothing, like I said, needs to be left off the table in that examination. Just because we've already always done something and always believed something was wonderful doesn't mean that it's wonderful for everybody. And it may be a growing minority of people, and we don't know how big that is.
Or when it affects them. Maybe it's 20 years down the line, or maybe those five vaccines together is what caused it. I mean, we don't even have a clue.
Nope, because nobody wants to look at it.
Yeah,
it's too hard.
Well, the too hard is enough, you know, okay, enough with that. So what my understanding is Trump actually is making some inroads and trying to do some things. Can you share with us what you know about what the Trump administration is doing? And there has been like a movie that you were part of, Vaccines Revealed, and with Robert Kennedy, and he seems to be very active, and Trump, there seems to be things going on. Can you share with us? Because there's the media is not reporting on it.
Well, there was Donald Trump has made statements over the years that he did have concerns about vaccines in association with autism. And he has, even before he ran for president, had met with some people about this issue because people had been contacting him. After he became president, he did make statements again about it. And Robert Kennedy, after having some discussions with him, said that he had been told by the Trump staff by Trump himself that he was going to be appointed as the head of a vaccine safety commission. But since that, there hasn't been any official appointment announcement. So I honestly don't know what the Trump administration is going to do. I don't know if anybody does, but we do know that Donald Trump has been concerned about the potential association between vaccines and autism. And that's really about all I know.
So it seems like he's concerned, but there hasn't been any more movement
no.
since what Robert Kennedy has said. Okay, so I would hope there would be. He has so much on his plate that I'm hoping that he hasn't had significant pressure. I suppose you can't really tackle vaccines while you're trying to also take care of Obamacare. There's all those issues going on at once.
And I think you're absolutely right that a Congress that can pass the 21st Century Cures Act overwhelmingly, because, as I said, the pharmaceutical industry is the biggest lobbyist on Capitol Hill, is not, and there are many of the same people are in that Congress, not completely, but it's been my experience over five or six administrations now in the past 35 years that no administration really wants to take on that industry. And I think that there's, I am sure, tremendous pressure from the pharmaceutical and medical trade industries to not have any examination of the vaccine system. The people want it, but I think that the powerful and influential people in corporations and associations in Washington do not want it. So there's no question.
Don't you think they'll get to a point where the people actually in the pharmaceutical companies themselves, unless they're evil, and maybe there's something there, that they will start to realize, maybe take their head out of the sand and start to realize, wait a minute, this really is destroying our community. We're killing people. I mean, we're sick and it's in mass and we're causing it.
You know, I have always hoped that that would happen, that there would be a critical mass, that even those who are in denial would take off those blinders and would say, you know, we have to tackle this. We have to find out. We can't leave nothing off the table. I just don't know. Every time a doctor or a scientist tries to publish a study, tries to speak out, they're vilified. They're hunted down, and basically their careers are destroyed. Now, there is a new group of physicians, and 275 physicians actually signed a letter that was announced at a press conference before the rally that we had yesterday. That's a lot of physicians, more physicians than I've ever seen, be willing to put their name on something. And I think it's an important start. But
it makes no sense to not recognize the fact that we have a very, very sick populace and to get to the bottom of it.
I agree. And I think I can tell you that the people will not rest.
Well, they can't.
They can't, and I always say today everybody knows somebody who was healthy, got vaccinated, and was never healthy again. And it's because of that awareness. And in fact, polls show that the millennials who have grown up with children in classrooms who are autistic brothers and sisters who are in special education classrooms, they are the most the ones who are asking the most questions. They're that generation is very concerned about vaccine safety. Now, they're the ones that are going to lead us into, you know, the second half of the 21st century. And I'm hoping as more young people, and there were quite a few young people in Washington, I was very happy to see young people come to this rally. I think that they are going to help get this done because eventually that tipping point, and I think we're there. I think after 35 years, we're there.
We're getting close if we're not.
Yeah.
Or we might be past it. I mean, you don't know, but all I know is that I've done other shows on sickness and what's going on. And I did research on the charts, every single area. There's a few areas that have decreased, but almost across the board, it's increasing. It's scary levels. And like I said, you go to Paris or another country farther east and people just look healthier. They're thinner. There's just not the problems that we have here. Now, it's not just our country. There's other Western countries, too, suffering from that as well, I'm assuming, right? But you go to an Eastern country or farther east, Paris isn't an Eastern country, or France isn't an Eastern country. But you go there, and I can't believe the difference.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, when I was younger, I lived in Europe. My father was in the military, and I graduated from high school in Europe and had a year of college there. This is many years ago, but I noticed then that the Europeans were not, they lived a simpler life, it seemed, and they were very, very committed to fresh vegetables, fresh fruits. They had a different outlook on diet, really, mm-hmm. And they took a walk every day. They were very athletic, very much wanted to exercise and get that constitutional every day. Whereas here, it was all about work. Over in Europe, it's more about the experience of life. No, and they didn't seem to be taking as many pharmaceutical products.
Yes.
They use more natural things like homeopathy, herbal therapy, old, you know, fashioned things.
They're closer to the East than we are. So maybe that has a more of a, you know, the Eastern medicine has a little bit more influence on him.
Don't know. I just know that they just didn't, they seemed healthier to me.
Gosh, they really do. I was talking to a woman that, I know this is just a sample of two that she gave me, but she said she came to Canada for 3 months. She's very thin. I couldn't believe how thin she was. I was jealous at how in shape she was and not an ounce of fat. But she said she came to Canada for 3 months and gained 25 pounds in 3 months and didn't change how much she ate. Took her a year to get it back off when she came to France. Back to France. And she said she had a friend from the United States that came for the summer and he was like 100 pounds overweight and he lost 50 pounds over the summer and he didn't diet either. And I keep thinking about that story because, and when I got off the plane and saw a whole mass of heavy people, I mean, there really is. It's the processed food. It's the GMOs. It's the, like you were saying, the synthetics in the vaccines. But we don't even know.
It's all the above. It's all the above. We have allowed the chemical and pharmaceutical industries to really enter the food arena, into our drugs and vaccines. And, in Europe, they don't have the oppressive mandatory vaccination laws like we do here. They use far fewer, their children get far fewer vaccines.
Yes, I remember hearing that.
Yeah, they do. And there's no vaccine laws in Britain or in many of the European countries. Some of them have, they require a measles vaccine or pertussis vaccine and polio vaccine, but they don't require all these other vaccines like diarrhea vaccines and HPV and all this.
Anything they think is optional or is just not that risky to get, they won't do it, right? I mean, they look at the health of the population, say it's just not worth it.
They just are more flexible over there. And here it's just more like you've got to do it. And people here, very authoritarian and very paternalistic, that people need to start questioning and learning and standing up for themselves and saying, we should have the freedom to stay healthy the way we believe is the best for us and our families. I mean, this is America. We're supposed to be able to have self-determination.
Well, and it's so hard with the media blackout. With 70% of their funding come from pharmaceutical companies, I can understand how they just simply don't want to rock the boat with their biggest advertisers. But that's killing our country.
Indeed. And it's really the alternative media. It's really radio programs like this that are willing to talk about these topics without fear, talk about them openly. And it's the alternative media, social media, that really has made a huge difference in the 21st century as the mainstream media has been corporatized and really controlled by government and industry. And so I am hoping that we will continue to have the freedom to be able to speak out in the alternative media. That also is up for questioning.
I know, that's scary. So in the meantime, that's a whole nother topic. We can get into that. How can people learn more about your organization? Because you have so much great information for families, parents, and for people who care about this issue.
Yes, we're often the first website that people come to when they're asking questions because we have a great presence on the internet. It's nvic.org for National Vaccine Information Center, nvic.org. And you can, we've got on the diseases, the vaccines, we've got all kinds of referenced information. We've got a brochure, Before You Vaccinate, Ask 8 questions that you can ask your doctor and ask yourself to help prevent injury if you decide you are going to go ahead and follow the schedule or follow an alternative schedule or whatever. So nvic.org is a great starting place. We also have a weekly journal called The Vaccine Reaction that you can sign up for at thevaccinereaction.org. It's free. We have nvicadvocacy.org, as I mentioned earlier, that is about you getting involved in your state to protect vaccine exemptions in your state that are under attack pretty much nationally. But, I'm very heartened by the fact that we've been able to protect exemptions in 21 states. We lost the exemptions in California in 2015. In that state now, unless you can find a doctor to write a medical exemption, which is almost impossible in the United States now, you have to get these vaccines as state mandates, or you cannot get an education, school education, and you also, if you're a healthcare or daycare worker, cannot hold a job.
Does that count for college? So like if my child wants to go to college in California, will they have to go back and get a bunch of vaccines that they weren't required to take in my own state?
It depends upon the college that you go to, but California is really becoming quite oppressive, and I you'd have to go and look at the requirements for each college. I just know that in daycare through high school, you cannot send your child to school without a medical exemption.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. I got to have you back as this whole issue develops and there's more things, legislation that goes through.
For sure.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. We'll talk soon.
Yes.
And that's all I have today for Business Game Changers. Go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and I will have information on how to get hold of Barbara Fisher and her organization, the National Vaccine Information Center. And also, I want to remind you, I have over 150 episodes and articles on my website at sarahwestall.com. Be sure to sign up for my newsletter and to subscribe to my YouTube channel. So for now, I hope everybody has an amazing day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.